Hello, everybody. Sorry if I sound to be laughing, but I'm somewhere quite different this afternoon. And in the background, you can hear David O'Neill's budget, and they're talking to me because they've not seen me before, and I think they're telling me off. So in a few moments, I'll switch this off, and we'll go inside, and David and I can talk about his budgerigar. Right, back inside the house now, things are a little bit quieter. As I was saying before, we're going to talk to David O'Neill again this afternoon. It's John Hodgson here, and he's going to tell us all about those noisy little fellas in the aviary. So over to David, and he'll tell us all about his budgies.
Well, good afternoon, John. Welcome back to Dog Void. Yes, budgerigars has been a big part of my life now for over 25 years. It started as a one-off, really. My daughter, Rachel, who about 24, 25 years ago decided she wanted to go away to teach a training college. And just before she went, she decided that she would like a budgerigar. So Susan and I went over to Keighley and purchased a budgerigar for her, and she purchased the cage, I think, if I remember, all those years ago. And we brought it home, and Julie, Rachel, turned out to want to go to Bangor College in Anglesey. So we took her down there one September when the new term was supposed to start, and everything was happy. This budgerigar, who was called Elvis, was taken all the way down to Anglesey in his cage, ready for her to start her course. Unfortunately, it didn't work out like that, because what happened was, on the evening that we'd taken Rachel down, we came home, back all the way to Todmorden. We sat at home thinking, well, she's gone there for 4 years, that's all sorted. But really it wasn't sorted, because literally just after our tea, we got a phone call from Rachel, "Dad, we've got a problem." "Oh yes, Rachel, what's that?" I thought she was going to say, "I want to come home." She didn't say that. She said, "Unfortunately, Elvis has got to come home. Elvis is classed as livestock, and the housekeeper has come round, checked us all for cats, dogs, guinea pigs, hamsters, and budgerigars are not allowed in Hall of Residence."
Oh dear.
So eventually, it took us another week. I said, "Well, you'll have to put up with him, Rachel. We're not coming down again tomorrow." So we went off the next weekend. We brought Elvis home. And subsequently, all this as part of the scenario of Elvis coming back home. What we had to do was, Susan, who were actually now sat in our dining room, and above where I'm looking up to the ceiling, I put a hook in the ceiling, and I hung Elvis on a chain in his cage in here. But pretty quickly, Mrs. O'Neill decided that seed and her dining room carpet didn't go very well together. So basically, Elvis was banned down the garden into part of the tool shed. I had a little tool shed down the garden, which actually was originally owned by Peter Ward, who some of you may know. His wife is part of the
Talking Newspaper. Yeah.
We got this shed from his garden, and it was my tool shed, but it ended up as half of it was Elvis's house. Of course, Elvis was there for a while, and unfortunately, he was deemed to be very lonely, so we got him a partner. And then, of course, we got another two, and another two, and another two, till eventually Elvis's home down there was deemed to be too small. So eventually I got quite interested in these budgies, and I bought a new aviary halfway down the garden, which now I keep chickens in. We had that custom built. We had that for maybe 8 or 9 years. And in that time, we bred a lot of budgerigars and started showing. We showed all over the north of England, and we went from beginner class to intermediate. And we ended up as champion budgerigar breeders for the country. This lasted for, till about 7 or 8 years ago, when we decided that that aviary was not fit for purpose, really. When we had, because we got to be champion budgerigar breeders, people from all over the country wanted to come and look at them.
I think they did.
And they ended up having to trail down our garden in wet snow and rain, and so eventually we were toying with the idea of having a garage built. We had a garage built first with a flat roof, And after that, we had a very nice builder who actually turned out to be a budgerigar breeder, who, when I said to him, will you build me a red brick shell on the top of my garage to which I can fit a budgerigar over? He said, I've been wanting to do that for myself for a number of years. He said, I'll have a practice on yours. So what he did was he built us a shell on the top of our garage, to which I now have actually fitted it all out as the aviary. As John said before, he was asking me a question about, we now judge budgerigars. Mm. Well, of course, when you get to the champion level and you've been doing it for a certain number of years, you obviously, they're always looking for people to judge shows. So the Yorkshire Budgerigar Society asked Susan and I to go along to become judges for the North of England. I also did the Budgerigar Society of UK's judging scheme, right. And to which I went to all the big shows in the North of England. And in fact, I didn't go because it didn't fit in with my teaching at the time, but I was even invited to go down to Jersey to actually judge a championship show down there.
Right.
And I mean, some of the people who now are judges in the Budgerigar Society are being asked to go all over the world, because the United Kingdom is actually seen, although we bought all our budgerigars in originally from the wild ones in Australia,
right.
We are now seen as being the forerunner of all the budgerigars in the world. So I get colleagues of mine ringing me up and saying, I've just come back from America, I've just come back from Australia, Germany's very popular, the United Arab Emirates, they're... So I'm expecting a call soon, so hopefully I might get a free holiday over to one of these hot climates.
Wow.
So basically we're running with about any time we can have up to 200 budgerigars. That's in the breeding season. At the moment, John's just been in the aviary and we'll have seen about 60. In October to November, all budgerigar breeders have sold their youngsters to other people.
Right.
They've also sold the birds that are over 4 years old to others who want to breed with them because they see you as a champion, so they mm-hmm. want to use yeah. your bloodstock. So at the moment I've got about 20 cock birds and 40 female birds, and what John didn't see at the time was I've got 12 pairs now, 24 budgerigars are actually in boxes and they're just starting to lay eggs.
Right.
And their eggs will be hatching just before Christmas. And in the new year, when the new rings from the Budgerigar Society arrive, they will have next year's 2017 rings on the legs, which are, it's a complicated story, but Budgerigar Society doesn't let us get away with any cheating. Every budgerigar has a different colour ring on. It has our own initials on, so I wanted to I've got a number plate on my car. If anybody sees budgies riding around Todmorden, that's mine. It's actually BU61 ESE, but from a distance it looks like budgies. I wanted to get Don 1, D-O-N-1, but somebody told me it had gone for £375,000. So I kicked that one into touch. But actually, what on my rings I've got on my budgerigar's feet, I've got D-O-N-1. So all my budgerigars go under the initials Don 1.
Wow.
So that's how... So budgerigars has become... not just a part of our life, but a big, big part of our life.
Yes, it must do. So it takes you all, or it has taken you all over the country, and it could have taken you all over the world.
Could have done.
You're now an acknowledged champion in this field.
That's right, we're champion budgerigar breeders, and that can never be taken off us.
We've
travelled the world, because Rachel, who I mentioned at the start, once she'd finished her teacher training, she's travelled the world. And wherever we go looking and seeing budgerigars. Because some of the countries, you see, budgerigar, actually, for those people who don't know, the Aboriginals call them betcherigars, which is seed eater. And every betcherigar that came from Australia was green. There wasn't any other colour in this world except green. For 140 years, we kept them, not me, but people all over the country, all green. And a lady down south, for some unknown reason, she bought a green one off another man, put two greens together, and out of that she got four greens and a blue one.
Mm-hmm.
And this blue one, 140 years ago, was the only blue budgerigar in the country. And from now, I think, from that blue one, I think in colours now, we're talking upwards of 50 different colours, because you can get lilacs, greys, you can get blues, you can get brown wings, you can get ones with stripes across the chest. A man in Belgium has just bred some that he calls spangles, because one came out of the nest and flew around. He went into his wife and he said, "I've just seen a bird flying in my aviary that looks like those things you stick on your dresses." Well, in the translation from Belgium to here, he called them sequins,
right,
which was on her dress.
Yeah.
But the Budgerigar Society called them spangles. So there are now 50-odd. So when we go to judge, we don't just judge one budgerigar, we judge all the colours of budgerigars, which then all go together to actually be brought together to win the best in show. Mm. So it's very complicated, and there are some people just go around talking about the genetics of budgerigars. And of course, what happens is, we, Susan and I, were lucky enough 2 years ago to follow our daughter, who was in Bangkok, and go to Australia. And we went intentionally to see wild budgerigars. When we got to where they were, they'd all flown away because it wasn't the wet season. But we went to a little zoo where they had some in cages. And when I got there, I was absolutely intrigued to see that they were about 3 inches long. Right. All wild budgerigars in Australia are tiny. In fact, they were so tiny, when the lady sent me to look in the aviary, I couldn't find them.
Right.
They were like on a little branch behind some leaves.
Right.
So I went back to this lady and said, "There's no budgerigars in there." She said, "Oh, yes, they are." She said, "They're hidden behind them." So when I went back, now what's happened over here is we have, the skeleton is exactly the same as it came from Australia. All that's happened here is, over the years and years of breeding, budgerigars now have what they call an underdown. It's like as if you were wearing a fur coat.
Yeah.
So instead of just wearing a fur coat, you've put two or three on top of it.
We've got a thermal.
So your budgerigar now ends up, some of them, I go judging at shows, and they can be 12 inches long from top of the head to the tail.
Well, I've seen some of your birds a lot bigger than
mine. Mine might not quite be 12, but there are some of them, certainly. I have some show boxes, which when I, if I take them showing, they have to bob the head down.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're that long. But all it is it's extra feather. It isn't actually extra size.
Bird.
When we talk about a man or a lady being very tall, that's because the skeleton is very tall. With budgerigars, and I know a guy called Dr. John Baker who teaches at Liverpool University, and he's done a test on them, and he says that there is no difference between the budgerigar of today to the ones that are still in Australia.
Right.
But yet the Australians are coming to buy them over here to take them back to now, because they want the exhibition budgerigars like we've got.
But won't they be too much, too well feathered to be in Australia?
Well, is that a problem? No, what they do is they don't take them back and put them outside. They take them back to put them like I've got in my aviary, because they have budgerigar shows.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, what happened was, there was one chap from Great Britain went over to live, he emigrated, took British budgies. Well, of course, he wiped the field of all the shows.
Yeah.
Because what he took back, all the Australian guys were going, "Whoa, hang on, these budgerigars are four times bigger than
special,
ours."
Yeah.
So what they all did was, all the guys, I wasn't breeding then, but all the people who were breeding exhibition budgerigars were inundated with people from Australia wanting to come back over here, or come over here, buy them, to take them back to Australia, to put them into their little birds, because all theirs were still at the same size.
Yes.
And of course, some of my colleagues, well, maybe years before me, made an absolute fortune, because we in budgerigar breeding, people say, you know, how much is a budgie?
Right.
And I would say, well, a normal budgerigar can be £20 as a baby. But I've known them to be £3,000. I know people from the Arab Emirates, who I was talking about before, and from Dubai, budgerigar eggs cannot be transported, because budgerigars are very clever birds. They're not like any other bird. They lay one egg every other day, and they start sitting on it on the first day.
Mm-hmm.
Canaries, sparrows, blackbirds, whatever you want to name, they'll lay a clutch of eggs, seven or eight, and then they'll sit on them. So a budgerigar egg is fertile from the first day once she starts sitting on it. Now, the Dubai people and the Emirates people want to take them over. They've even tried taking them in little matchboxes with little things to keep them warm.
What, the egg?
Yeah, the egg. Yeah, but right. And they've been paying £1,000 a time for one budgerigar egg, I'm told, off one chap who... Because, you see, if you become world champion, it's like anything else.
Oh, yes.
World champion, everybody wants your birds. Mm. So, basically, we've won shows and we've been to... And it's surprising. When we win a show... It's surprising how hot the phone is. The next week, people will write your name down. They'll say, David O'Neill won the Yorkshire Championship with a yellow-faced grey. Pick up the phone. Hello, Mr. O'Neill. I don't hope you don't mind me ringing, but I'm interested in a yellow-faced grey. Have you got anything like the one that you won with at Doncaster last week, or the one that you won at Dewsbury, or at Wakefield, or Leeds? And you'll say, well, I have, but unfortunately... You know, and just as a little anecdote, when I started in this game, I started with all pet budgerigars. Rachel left us one.
Yeah.
I then went to pet shops and I bought and bought and bought. And the story I tell everybody that makes them laugh is this. I saved up a year of all the money I made from selling pet budgies. Because if anybody can remember, the pet budgies that used to be at Riggs were not Riggs. They were mine.
Oh, yours.
They were my budgies.
I remember that.
Riggs don't have budgerigars. They sell cages, and I just sell the budgies. But I saved up all the money I made, maybe £10 at that time, for a budgie. And I saved £200 up. And I went to a chap over near Manchester who'd been the world champion. And everybody said, you must buy a budgie off this guy. He's wonderful. When I got there, he had six cages, all with maybe 8 or 10 budgies in. So he said, what is it you're looking for? And I said, well, I'd like a nice big grey cock to put to one of my hens. And he said, right, well, he said, I'll tell you what the price is. Those are £100 each. Those are £200. Those are £400. And he's going up the cages back one by one. Those are £800. And I thought, now then, the next lot should be roughly £800 to £1,000. So he said, and those there you can't afford.
Right.
So I said, oh, that's not very good. I said, I'm a teacher at Todmorden High School. He said, well, I think you've come with about, I think those two cages, if you're a beginner, and I was a beginner, he wasn't being too nasty.
No.
What he was saying was, those budgerigars there, because they were so heavy, so full of feather, yeah, because budgerigars, the one thing you want budgerigars to do is to have eggs and have babies.
Mm,
And he said, you can buy one of those for £1,000, and I'm telling you, you will not get any full eggs off it, because they've got too much feather. They're too chubby, they're too fat. So he said, it's only champions like himself who can actually get those birds to actually get any off them.
Right.
So that was my implementation into going buying budgies. Ooh, was I could afford them at that end, but I couldn't afford them at that end. But in a way, I couldn't afford them because they wouldn't have been any good to me.
No.
So that's a potted history of budgerigars. So for people who think budgerigars are just a little thing in a cage, when people come here and look at mine, they say, oh, I didn't realise. I mean, I used to, when I was at Todd High School, I used to have little groups of students come round and have a look at them. And of course, they all thought they'd walk in there, and as John's found today, none of them were talking to him, actually.
Yeah.
They're only chirping.
Yeah.
Because all they hear, budgerigars don't talk, they copy, they mimic.
Yes.
So basically, if they're sat in my aviary all day, all they hear is, they have a radio on, but all they hear really is other budgerigars. So they copy. But if they're in a house with one person, normally a lady, that lady just says, and that's why budgies are all called Joey and Peter.
Yeah.
Because they're easy words. I once had a young man came and he said he was going to call it Eric Cantona, his budgerigar. I said, well, you may be going to call it Eric Cantona, but it'll be difficult for the budgerigar to say it.
Yeah.
But then I actually said that story to one chap, and one chap said, well, I once went to a zoo in Costa Rica where I was sat looking at budgerigars in a cage, and a budgerigar on the perch in front of me started talking in German.
Right.
And it astounded him. It turned out that the old lady who had had these budgies spoke to them in 7 different languages, and all her budgerigars all could speak 7 languages.
God.
Because that's, well, that's what they heard.
Yeah,
because she spoke to them in Spanish, yeah. German, French, she, every day, English. Because if you speak to your budgerigar in French, it will speak French because they only copy.
Yeah.
So basically, it's become a way of life. It's been 25 years, which has taken us all around the country, which John was just talking about. And it's taken us to meet so many people. I mean, for those who are interested, just before I finish, there's been some quite well-known people being budgerigars. I mean, I think maybe one of the ones that people spring to mind is Jeff Capes.
Oh, yes.
The big, strong...
Yeah, strongest man in the world. Yeah.
I've judged Jeff Capes' his birds, and he's come up to me and put him in. He's an enormous chap. If you'd see the size of his jeans when he wears them, his wife has to put a patch in the back. But he came up to me one day, and he put his arm on my shoulder, and he said, "Nah, David," because he's a Lincolnshire lad.
Right.
"Nah, David, why is to give my bird only 3rd place in that class?" And he put his arm on my shoulder, and it was like a tree trunk hitting me. I mean, he is, like, enormous.
Yeah.
And the other one who was quite well-known for budgerigars was James Hunt, the racing driver.
Right.
James Hunt was absolutely fanatical on budgerigars. He had 3 large aviaries in a garden, and he was going out all over the world doing his racing driving. He went to Germany, he went to Brazil. Mm. The first thing he ever did when he got there was ask, "Are there any good budgerigar breeders around here?"
Right.
Because once he'd done the race, he was off to see him, see if he could get any budgerigars off them.
And he'd be able to bring them into this country if he bought
them.
Well,
at that time, he had to put them through quarantine.
Yeah.
But now, because of the laws of the EU, as they were, whether they're going to change or not, I don't know. But people, at one time, when we said we had a world show in Doncaster, it wasn't really a world show, because the only people who could show were people from Great Britain, because we said we had the best birds anyway. But now, when I pick up the catalogue for the Doncaster, it's always held at Doncaster Racecourse, is the world championship. There's birds there from all over Europe, Australia and New Zealand and places like that, and the Emirates haven't really got round to it. But the Europe, all they need is a certificate from their vet at home to say that those birds are fit when they left.
Mm-hmm.
At one time, they had to have a quarantine check, they had to have a vet check, they had to, when they were at Doncaster, they had to be checked in, because if they were coming into the country and sitting alongside our budgerigars for 3 days, which they would be at a big show, they could have been anything passing between them. But now, yes, I mean, I think the World Championship show this year, luckily, has been won by a couple of chaps from this country, but I noticed that the best henning show, that they call it the opposite sex, that's the hen.
Right.
The hen was a man from Belgium won this year.
Right.
So they're bringing them in and out all you know, to show them. So, and it's making the British people not so blasé, because the British people thought,
yes,
you know, we've got a monopoly on this. So that's the world of, we call our aviaries Stepping Stones aviaries. We're known in the budgerigar world as, because this is Stepping Stones,
Stones Road.
And we have stepping stones all across the garden, so we call it Stepping Stones Aviaries. So you have to, if you have a stud of budgerigars, and if you get championship level, you have to call it by a name.
Yeah.
So we are now, well, people don't use it round here, but we are known in the budgerigar world as Stepping Stones Aviaries at championship level.
Right. Well, David, thank you.
Welcome.
I've known you for years. I've never any idea at all that this was all going on at the end of your garden and so on. It's been absolutely amazing. Thank you. And I hope everybody's enjoyed that as much as we have. So, once again, if you want to have more contact with the Talking Newspaper, if you go onto the website tntod.org.uk, you'll be able to find out. You'd be as wise as us. So, thank you once more, David.
You're welcome.